We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.
All right, welcome to this first episode of Owl Pellets for 2016. This is Brian Myers from Florida. We've got with us the regular suspects, Marshall Baker from Oklahoma. Say hi, Marshall.
Hello.
And Kate Shoulders from Arkansas. Hey, Kate.
Hello.
We're excited to be coming to you today to talk about something pretty exciting, the work-family balance. We had an opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with Tyson Sorensen from Utah State University. Tyson did some great work looking at something called time-based work-family conflict, basically work-family balance. In there, we're going to have had a great interview with him. Again, like I said, Tyson is an assistant professor at Utah State. He's originally from Idaho, where he grew up on a dairy farm. After getting his bachelor's and master's in ag ed from Utah State, Tyson spent 7 years as a high school ag teacher in Arizona in an urban suburban setting. So he's got some great experience there, both great degrees, but also great experience there. And he did some great work looking at this idea with ag teachers and has some great findings for us and has some great recommendations for us. So without further ado, we're going to go ahead and go to that interview where Kate Marshall had a chance to sit down with Tyson and talk to him about this time-based work-family conflict idea. All right, Tyson, we're glad to have you here with us today. And so we're going to be talking about some work you've done here on time-based work-family conflict. And to kind of get us started here, why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and how you define it?
Excellent. Well, thanks for having me. First off, time-based work-family conflict is, a lot of people talk of it in terms of like work-family balance, and we can conceptualize it as that if we would like. Essentially, though, the definition is it's incompatibility between life roles. And so, time is a limited resource. And so if we're spending extra time at work, a lot of hours at work, what that means is that because it's a limited resource, we're taking away time from home in our family role. And so by doing that, it creates incompatibility between those two roles. Again, it's easily conceptualized as this idea of work-family balance, though.
So when you talk about family here, is it just for those that may have a traditional definition of family, or does that involve folks single, married, whatever the relationship status might be? Is that all playing this thing as well?
Basically, how I defined it was any and all relationship outside of the workplace. So it doesn't have to be married. Close friendships, it could be single, but with friends or other life. Basically, it's just life outside of work.
Do four-legged family count? The fur babies that we all hold dearly? Do they count in that family balance, or are they somewhere? Are they another dimension that we're not going to discuss today?
Yeah, I would certainly think so. Again, when I define family, I define it very broadly as any and all relationship outside of the workplace. So if that means that you spend time with your animals, you have a time commitment outside of work that takes you, that you have to spend time doing, then you could certainly define that. Now, I did also, when I did my research, I also asked, besides just specific, family, I also defined, or I asked participants, what other life roles do you participate in? And I was surprised there was quite a few that actually reported that they were farmers, ranchers, and they had other jobs as well. And so those are other commitments outside the workplace.
So you talked about the research here. So why don't you kind of give us a brief summary of the research you've conducted on this and what some of the key findings were that you had?
So it was a national study. What I found, this is very interesting, I asked about work hours, and I found that agriculture teachers work well beyond a standard 40-hour work week. In fact, and what I found was they work about 60 hours a week. That's including weekends. So it's about 55 hours a week plus about 4 hours every weekend, which comes out to about 60 hours a week is what they work. And what's interesting is I asked the teachers what they prefer to work, how many hours they prefer to work. And interestingly, they didn't want to work that many hours. It was about 16 hours less that they wish they were working. So about 44, 45 hours was about where agriculture teachers would like to work. Another interesting thing was that there's no difference between males and females in the amount of work hours. The other thing I found was that these hours that they worked, they were directly related to work-family conflict. So in other words, the more hours that teachers work, the more work-family conflict they experienced. And also, the higher their intention to quit their job as well. The agriculture teachers had pretty high work-family conflict and relatively low, they perceived relatively low work-family balance ability. So the ability to balance was relatively low that they reported. Again, there was no difference between males and females in work-family conflict. And I thought this was one of the most interesting findings because you think about females, if we're talking about traditional gender roles, have a large responsibility. Maybe they feel more of the pressure to take care of the home. Well, it was interesting to see that actually there was no significant difference there between males and females in terms of work-family conflict. Some of the biggest predictors of work-family conflict that I found were, again, the amount of hours they worked each week at work, how supportive they felt the work culture was, work salience, so how important or central they felt the work was, and family, and then the number of agriculture teachers per school. Those were four of the major predictors of work-family conflict.
Sure. Do you know about any other career fields, how ag teachers might compare in their level of conflict between the two? How does that compare to other careers? For example, if we switch careers to something else because we feel like we have high work-family conflict, are we going to find similar levels elsewhere, or other careers, do they have less conflict or more?
Yeah, that's a great question. Some studies suggest that 87% of U.S. workers feel overworked, and only 42% maintain a good work-life balance. And so I don't think it's just specific to agricultural education. I think it's kind of this is our culture here in the United States. We like to work a lot of hours, maybe not 60 hours a week, and that's kind of what I really want to look at, is to see where agricultural education fits in that big picture of these other professions.
One thing I found that was interesting, you mentioned the number of ag teachers per school was negatively correlated to work-family conflict.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because one would think, well, you know, I can remember when I was teaching high school, if I just had another ag teacher, we could, you know, I could do so much more, and I have so much more time, and that kind of stuff. What's going on here?
Yeah, this was a real surprise in our findings. I think, so again, what's happening here is the more ag teachers per school, the more work-family conflict that a teacher feels. And so like you said, you would think it'd be the other way around. And so one of the things I think is going on here is we tend to, as we build our programs and we get more teachers into our programs, we don't put the brakes on. We continue to just keep building, and we continue to just add more things to our plate. And I think we have a tendency that whenever we do have clear space in our calendar, we immediately fill it up with more work things. We don't ever give ourselves a break. And I think that's probably the issue. These are also programs that have they're probably larger programs to warrant, you know, multiple teachers, which means there's more students, which may also have some implications for this finding as well.
Tyson, I was wondering, so as we look at this, I mean, it seems like I think all of us have been in that spot as an ag teacher where you kind of have to make the decision, am I going to, you know, continue to build an amazing program, or am I going to, you know, make the conscious decision to limit what our chapter can and will do, which may mean, you know, I can't coach another school, another after-school team. I can't go to another additional show. So anecdotally, behind your research with 7 years teaching, beyond just this fact that it is what it is, you know, what would you encourage ag teachers to do, you know, in this research? What would you suggest they do in managing that tough decision of go home or work towards winning possibly another career development event?
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that question, because really, you know, the heart of this research is should be application. It's what we can take from this and learn from this. And so I appreciate that question. And I believe that there's four keys, four suggestions that I would have based on my own experiences, my own research on this topic. The very first thing is we need to determine our values, priorities, and our goals. Covey, in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, talked about beginning with the end in mind. He talked in that book, it talks about what are people going to say at your funeral? Are they going to say that you were a workaholic your whole life and never spent time with your family? And so that, to me, is very key. We have to first prioritize and figure out what is most important. Is family important? Is spending time with my kids while they grow up important? And if so, then I need to do something to make that happen. So that's the first step. And what's interesting, actually, from my findings, I looked at work salience and family salience, so how central these roles were. The participants actually said that family was more important. They rated family salience way higher than work salience, but yet they still spent so much time at work and preferred to spend less time at work. So I think the difficult thing is, yeah, we may be able to prioritize, but when we have to put it into action, that's where it becomes a little bit more difficult. So that leads us to our second thing. I think we have to be purposeful in planning. We can't just, you know, say we have high values, but then just sort of continue on the same road we're going. We have to actually plan to balance. And one of the things, like I talked about a little bit earlier, was that it's okay to have blank spaces in our calendar. We should have some open blocks of time once in a while. Don't schedule work things there. We need to have some of those blank slots in our time. We need to set time limits in our calendar. This was the biggest thing that helped me as an ag teacher, was that I just sat down and I calendared and I said, okay, Monday and Wednesday are the only days I'm going to work on CDEs with my students. Tuesdays are devoted for FFA, so we're going to have meetings, officers, you know, those type of things are going to be on my Tuesday calendar. Thursdays are going to be SAE visits. And so by doing that, it helped me really sort of organize my life. But the best thing is what it did is it helped me put a time limit on those activities. I was having a hard time even getting my lessons planned, and I'm sitting here working with my CDE teams trying to work with them after school, and I don't even have lessons prepared for the next day, and it was challenging. And so I would suggest, you know, I had to go back to my priorities. What were my priorities? So, and then I had to plan for it. So that was the second thing, is plan purposefully. Now, as part of this, I don't suggest that we be mediocre by any means. I believe strongly that we can have very strong programs and have a balance as well. And I think the key is using volunteers. When I started using volunteers, my life became so much easier. And I would call in past FFA members. They were my favorite ones to use. They were usually stayed pretty local as they were going to local community college or whatever. And they came in and they trained all my CDE teams. I kind of see it as like a NFL coach that, you know, they have an offensive coordinator that works with the offense. They have a defensive coordinator that works with the defense. Linebackers coaches, wide receivers coaches. The head coach kind of just oversees it, manages it. And I think that should be more of our role as ag teachers, is getting the resources in place for our students rather than us doing all the grunt work all the time. So there's that. So that's the second thing, is plan for these type of things. Plan to get volunteers and plan in our calendars. And then the third thing I think that we need to do is be more efficient and productive. You know, we work a lot of hours. Research shows that we work a lot of hours, but how much of our day is really spent in non-productive ways? You know, how much time do we waste chatting with other teachers or tinkering with projects and things like that? And so I would suggest that there's always opportunities for us to improve. You know, when is your prime time? Mine is in the morning. I like to get to work early in the morning because that's when I'm most productive. And when I was an ag teacher, I tried to reduce distractions so that students and others couldn't interrupt me for certain periods of time while I had to do very important things. And so Those are my three main suggestions, I think, that we can pull from this research.
Those are great, Tyson. Thanks for sharing those. And these are all things that we can talk more about and all of us know that we have to look at here. And as you go through here and you talk a lot about, you know, the amount of time and that sort of things, but through your research and experience that you've done here, have you come up with any other things that a teacher could do to reduce this work-family conflict besides just spending less time at work?
Yeah, so again, I think it goes back to one of the findings I had was what are the biggest predictors of work-family conflict? And there were two of them there that really didn't even deal with time. One of them was a family supportive work culture, and the other was work salience. And so I think that the salience thing really goes back to what I suggested is our priorities. We've got to get those priorities in place. That's the first thing. But what I want to talk about here, though, is interesting about this work-family culture, a family-supportive work culture. And this is actually what I found, even more than time, this was actually the biggest predictor of work-family conflict, is this idea that teachers don't feel that their workplace is supportive of families, that maybe the profession isn't supportive of families, and so they struggle with that concept. So I think that there's some improvements that can be made there, and it starts with the teacher. You know, the teacher can be a change agent in the school and in the profession, helping to improve this culture, maybe developing connections with other teachers that are in the same boat that have children, and maybe they're feeling the same thing. And so getting some kind of support group within the schools, within the profession, our teachers association should be aware of this issue. I think another thing is that we have to have effective communication with our own families as to the hours that we work and the importance of work, but also family.
All right. Well, this is great stuff, Tyson. Thank you so much for sharing. We're looking forward to where your research goes from here and the other applications that it has for ag teachers around the country as they go through to address this very important topic. We most certainly appreciate you spending time with us today to talk about this.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
All right, guys, I thought that was a great interview with Tyson. He talked about a lot of great, interesting things that we had there regarding this idea of time-based work-family conflict. There's a lot of things to digest. Ag teachers talk a lot about the amount of time we spend in talking. As we go through there, one of the big things that came up for me was this idea of how do teachers prioritize? How do we figure out where we're going to spend our time and makes the most effort in here? And so I don't know, what were some of the big ideas you guys got from what Tyson told us today?
For me, I think it's a really pertinent topic for ag teachers. I know that sometimes when I'm working with pre-service teachers, I want to give them some mentors, and so we do guest speakers. And we have a guest speaker each year on somebody that I think is really great at balancing their family and their, you know, their home life and their work life. And there were a couple of years where I couldn't find a single female that wasn't divorced or single spending all of her time at work because those that were successful at balancing the family part had quit their jobs. So it's obviously a problem. So I think it's a real pertinent topic.
Well, and on my end, it's, you know, there's just decisions. And, you know, my wife personally is an attorney, and she has to make decisions to make her career fit. And, you know, I think Tyson was saying the same thing, is as an ag teacher, we also have to make decisions. And I think that can be difficult, but, you know, I think everyone's looking for the kind of golden gun for how to fix this life-work balance issue with teaching ag. And there may not be a golden gun. There may just be some hard decisions and some hard discussions and maybe some hard even reviewing our program and the pressure we put on teachers to do so many things to be considered impressive. I think if teachers, what I pulled from this interview was, if teachers will stop trying to necessarily compare and compete, and if they can more fully engage in trying to instruct and motivate and apply, then I think they could start to eliminate some things and get to that, you know, some sense of balance. But it doesn't seem like there's an easy solution. It sounds like it's a tough set of decisions.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things that it's important to remember, as Tyson pointed out, this whole idea of work-life balance or time-based work-family conflict is not just an ag teacher thing. I mean, he pointed to the fact that the entire U.S. culture, we as Americans are bad at this. Teachers are our ones that we're most interested in, and we need to think about what we can do to help make sure that we have good families. And like, as he talked about defining family very broadly, regardless of what your stage in life is. But Marshall, I think you hit on something that's really important, is how do we evaluate ourselves as ag teachers and how do we measure our own success? And I think sometimes, I know I do it, I fall into this trap, but I think as a high school ag teacher you did it too, is you measure your worth by how many hours you spend it, you put in. You're like, oh man, I worked till 8 o'clock every night this week, so I must be really, really good to do that. And I'm spending all these extra hours where if I look back, sometimes all I'm doing is really just spinning my wheels and not being real productive. And I think that was one of the things Tyson came back here, is being honest with ourselves and our calendar to make sure the time that we are spending is productive, not just sitting there wasting time, you know, not doing the things that we need to do. And I think that's the big take home for me, is to be really honest with myself. What are the important things to do, and how do I invest my time to be most productive?
Some of it, I think we also, in being honest with ourselves, as you were saying, is seeing what we really enjoy, right? And maybe, as you're saying, focusing on, I worked, you know, 11 hours today, or I worked 10 hours today. If someone were to ask you out, you know, and say, oh, you didn't have to work all that, you could do something else, would you do it anyway because you just love it? You know, is there a lot of, a good portion of your day where maybe, you know, if you say, woe's me, I worked for 11 hours, but I loved 10 and a half of it, and I would have done that even if I, you know, even if I had the option not to, maybe it's not something that we need to hold as a, you know, like a, we don't need to carry it around as that woman at National Convention said once about like our bad potatoes, right? If working 11 hours or 10 hours or however long you worked and you got to do it on something awesome, you know, that you love doing, that you would do anyway, maybe it's not a bad potato. You know, maybe that's a kind of a win, right? Mm-hmm. If you got paid for that many hours to do something that you love to do. So it might not be, you know, a negative all the time, but it is set up in our culture to view working like that negatively and carrying those around as bad potatoes.
My favorite analogy of the entire interview that I think I would have really listened to was this idea that you're a head football coach and that you've got to get some assistant coaches all around you that have those specialties. And, you know, for me, the best thing I ever did is coaching a floriculture team, I had no idea what I was doing, and it would have taken hours to prepare for that. But rather, we had this partnership with a local flower shop where she was excited to come in, and she came in weekly and trained a team that did really well. And then the students that I had ended up working for her. You know, and if you can start to build that idea of a coaching staff, I think that's vital. If you sit around, you know, if you're a teacher and you're finding yourself overwhelmed or you can't get to everything, then maybe you need to start looking for volunteers and start finding a way to delegate some of those jobs out so that you're not just doing everything at a low level. I love that idea. That's something I could have heard and listened to it when I was teaching ag, for sure.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I wish someone had, and I did it every once in a while, but man, not to the degree that I could have with the resources that I had. You know, that we just say, oh, I'm too proud, it's mine, you know, it's got to be me. But it doesn't.
Well, and then Kate talked about too, it's those that are folks that are ag teachers that are married, but then it's the single ag teachers, it's the ones that are trying to have that outside balance. It's just as important whether or not you have a spouse or significant other at home or kids or that kind of thing, is that it is important for you to have a life. You need, if you don't maintain yourself, you're not going to be bringing the best that you have to the table to work for your program, work for your kids, to make those things happen. And I think we've all gone through in points in our career where we kind of had this balance thing worked out better than others. And if you go back and look, at least for me, if I go back and look at my career when I think I had this work-life balance thing out pretty dang good, I was just as quote-unquote productive in my job as I was any other time. But for some reason, I don't keep myself, my safeguards in there to stay in that kind of balance all the time. And I got to kind of keep coming back. And I think that goes through here with what Tyson's recommendations were. This is in the beginning of the year. A lot of people set New Year's resolutions. we talk about this kind of stuff, setting your priorities and your values and your goals. What do you want to have accomplished? How are you going to do that? Be purposeful in your planning. Have all those different aspects built into your life. And think about how in ways that you can be most efficient and productive in there rather than just spending the most time in trying to get things accomplished to do that.
Brian, if you don't mind, I'm going to give a little tip. I feel like I'm at the point that I'm more balanced than I've ever been before in my personal and work life. And one thing has done it, and I've been shocked. So there's no research behind it, but I'm going to share it just in case it helps anybody else too. Each day, I have a little checklist for myself. I do one thing for my family. I do one thing for my bank account. I do one thing for my house. And I do one thing for myself. And so if I have a house that's a total disaster, if I do one thing, I'm done. And I can move on. And I can sleep at night and not worry that the floor still needs vacuuming, because that can be tomorrow's thing. And so if I'm able to sit down for 15 minutes and read a book to my kids, or spend an hour and a half with them and take them to bowling or whatever, the time doesn't matter. It's getting one thing off the list so that each of those things is constantly maintained. And I found that with that, good or bad days, my kids and I always have a great relationship. I should probably add my husband in there too at some point. Maybe that'll be like a fifth thing, but I'm not quite there yet. So my kids and I always have a positive relationship. My house is never totally clean, but I'm never embarrassed if people come in because I've done one thing each day. My bank account is always at a point where I know what's going on with it and I don't feel like I've spent money irresponsibly. And I always feel like I'm giving a little time to myself. Now, whether that's, you know, I went to work out or I, you know, watched my favorite trashy TV show, or I got 4 Oreos after all the kids were in bed. Like I said, the time doesn't matter. I know I got to do something for myself, and I don't feel like I'm neglecting any of those areas, including my own personal time. I found that to be really helpful in maintaining my own balance. So if it helps anybody else, great, but there's no research behind it. I just made it up.
Well, I think that's great, Kate. Thanks for sharing that. I think that's a great way to wrap up our session here. There's going to be a conversation that we have with folks are going to become ag teachers, folks who are ag teachers. The interesting things here, too, that I really think why this speaks to everybody is Tyson and his research found that there was no real correlation between stage of career either. Whether you're early in career, late in career, you know, everybody was facing these kind of things. And so this is something for all of us to be working on. And hopefully the tips that we talked about here will be helpful for all the ag teachers out there, to help us not only stay in the profession, but be productive and make a difference in the lives of the students we have in our classroom. Thanks for joining us for this edition of Owl Pellets. We appreciate everyone listening to us and look forward to the next one.
Thanks, y'all. See ya.
Thank you, guys.
We know agricultural educators.
And we know that the job is hard work.
Here to make your job easy is Owl Pellets, where we are regurgitating information just for you.